where forgiveness becomes relevant is when there's disloyalty. I've used three phrases here. They're not so much discrete phrases in themselves. Disloyalty, betrayal. We lay our hearts bare to other folks, and then they leave us out there in some way. They use what we've laid out. They use the risking, what they know about us, against us. We're hung out there. Or we're in a vulnerable spot, and then folks pull back. And the pain's significant. If we're not vulnerable, we're probably not impacted in a way that forgiveness is relevant. So the more intimate the relationship, the more risk that's involved, the more likelihood that forgiveness is going to be part of the picture. So we give of ourselves, and then something happens, or if you want, doesn't happen. So for folks who are not in or hold back from vulnerability in relationship from that side, forgiveness in that sense will be probably less of an item for them. But we have other environments where there's different kind of relationships. I think about our work environment. It might or might not have lots of emotional vulnerability, but the well-being of our family is tied to it. And we give of ourselves in that kind of way, and then something pulls back. And part of that is also related to the expectation. How do we expect that's going to be? So I'm asking a lot from you, a person says. This is what I'm asking. This is how it's going to be. And you enter into that. You have an understanding what it's going to be like, and then they pull back. And you're hung out there. We're talking potential for forgiveness. We give our heart to someone in some kind of way. You know, when you think of a church setting or a community setting, and folks, they might be praying together, they talk about their lives together, and then all of a sudden it shows up on the prayer chain. And you go, what? How did that happen? And the person's response is, you mean you don't want people to pray for you? You don't actually want people to care for you? What are you thinking? It's not about that. It's about, I risked, I trusted, and now you violated my trust. And the betrayal is there. So forgiveness is relevant in those kinds of scenarios. And so we lay our hearts bare, and then folks pull back. Or we lay our hearts bare, and then folks use it against us. It's a massive betrayal at that point. I've told you this. I've let you in on that. And we get a little farther down the way, and then you use it against me. Then we're in the betrayal place. And our purely human response to that is to try to get some kind of relief from the emotional pain. We go, I just simply want relief because the pain's overwhelming. What's your sense of what folks tend to do? I'm not asking you to stereotype. I'm simply thinking from your own observation. What are you familiar with? I'm not asking necessarily about you. What are you familiar with that folks do when the emotional pain just kind of gets right up here? I mean, what are you familiar with? What do you see? How do folks respond to you? The emotional pain's intense.
Numbing with chemicals.
Okay, numbing with chemicals and Do you want to be specific, be more illustrative, more specific about what you're thinking about?
Alcohol.
Okay. Alcohol. Okay. So you go find that yourself, or you can have it prescribed. Points. Okay. My understanding is the most frequently prescribed medication is Ativan. It's an anxiety medication. It's just like, I can't get through. Okay. So numbing's one piece. What else are you familiar with? Absolutely. This is not a problem. Okay. Or just plain blasting off. Okay? What else are you familiar with?
Try to control your environment.
Try to control your environment. And what would that, can you run that out a little bit, Karen?
Either like through perfectionism, or you try to fill your day with busyness because there are things you can control the events, but you can't control the emotions.
Okay. So you're thinking there's inside stuff going on, and on the outside, trying to find ways to do things to manage that. Okay.
Related to that control piece, if it's sometimes if it's emotional or sexual, like controlling relationships and turning to things like porn, where you can control that, or you think you can, anyway.
And yeah.
So it's relationally. I'm going to become my little island and take care of what I need to. And
yeah. And so part of that is just simply cutting off and kind of living in your own world. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Well, when people respond in emotion that takes over their brain or their heart, like fear or, there's all kinds of things they can do. They hide away from reality. They, you know, but it's, I think the core of it is responding out of the emotion instead of out of, you know, finding truth and peace and forgiveness and moving forward from those types of things.
Yeah. And so when the pain is intense, mm-hmm. I mean, those kind of responses are part of the deal. Mm-hmm. And I guess part of the opportunity for us is that when we see that, whether it's in ourselves or somebody else, is to think about it as a messenger. And what I mean by that is you do the behavior yourself, or I'm doing the behavior myself, or I see it in somebody else. It's not actually the message, it's the messenger. And the messenger is, man, the pain is up here. It's just, I don't know if I can get through. So I have folks say to me, the kinds of things you're talking about, man, when I'm anxious and I'm just, I got the cleanest house in town. I'm thinking, well, I got an address for you. So it's not about stop it. It's about what does this mean? This is going on here. And so when that, for you and I, when that pain gets intense, it's pretty helpful for us to know what actually are the things that I do when my pain's up there. What are the indicators for me? And actually, when we get familiar with ourselves, it's not actually that complex. For somebody else to figure it out might be complex, and sometimes we need people to help us a bit. But we know. Yeah. So when the pain gets up, irritability picks up, we get pretty short with people sometimes, a whole range of things, some of the things you described, the isolation piece. So there's a range of those kinds of things. And so sorting out what that means, in other words, what are the indicators, are a pretty critical piece. And so you've described quite a range, and I think descriptive, accurate, and we could kind of go with that. and we could add to it or not. But when the pain's up there, we react. And, you know, if you think about it, you translate to a physical kind of pain. Yeah, I'd like any kind of physical pain that I have. I'd like not to yell and scream. But we can have physical pain that we just can't bear. We can have emotional pain that's pretty tough to bear. And so it's not about primarily calmness. Sure, we want to help people handle the emotional pain or physical pain. But it's not primarily about get calm. It's about one, recognizing what in the world's going on here. And in my observation, when we let people tell us their pain, whether it's a neighbor across the fence, whether it's one of our children, when it's a colleague, I'm not talking about therapy here, folks. I'm talking about relationship. I'm talking about intimacy. What I mean by intimacy is saying this is what's going on with me and being accepted. When we do that, the folks are no longer alone. They're not alone in their pain. And what we can do in our own lives is we can place God in the equation. We acknowledge the pain and we acknowledge what's occurred. And when we experience, put God in the equation, what we do is we experience weakness as an opening to notice God's mercy. We're not alone at that point. Whether it's with people, somebody that we can get face to face with, but we begin to identify, this actually is what's going on for me. Those are pretty simple words. It's real hard to do. You know, if I said, I'm going to illustrate asking you to do something simple. I'm not going to ask you to do it. But if I said to any two of you, I said, go outside, find a gray car, one of the common colors. White, I think, is the most common color of vehicle in North America. So if I said to you, find a white car, find a gray car, go to the front of that car, put your hands under the bumper, and lift until the front tires are off the street. There's nothing. That's a very simple statement, and you know exactly what I'm saying. There's nothing confusing about that. It's really hard to do. I can't do it. And I can't think of anybody that I could choose to go with me that could help me to do that. Right? So it's a very simple thing. Not easy at all. So inviting somebody to participate with you, to say this is what is, that's incredibly hard stuff to do. It's easy words. Really hard to do. And recognizing our weakness, recognizing our humanity, is an absolutely critical piece. It's a pretty easy thing. It's really hard to do. I don't want this to be happening to me. This is too hard. It's also part of being human. Yeah.
Recognizing that this is hard, this is maybe where some ownership starts to take place. Earlier you said you're identifying all these things,
Yeah. But
you didn't talk about actually admitting and owning them.
As in, this is what's happening to me. Is that what you mean, Joel?
Right.
Yeah. This is what's happening to me. Mm-hmm. And that business that goes on inside our minds, I'm going to say inside our heads, is really not helpful to us because it goes round and round. And it begins to move away from a linear business, a linear cognitive business, to just round and round and round. Here's what I mean. If I were to take a tennis ball and rack it, compared to the size of this room, well, I don't know. Tennis ball is probably about like that. I haven't hit one for a while. I'm going to say about like that. And compared to the size of this room, it's pretty small. But if I start hitting that around with the racket, it fills up a fair bit of space. And the more I hit it, the more space it fills up. The thoughts that are going through your mind and mine are like the tennis ball. They are what they are. And then when those things start running, they fill up a lot of space. And when we experience painful, hurtful events, it's that stuff that we think about at 2 in the morning. Right? You know what that is. Okay, we could identify what the content is for each of us, but that's not what I'm talking to you about. If I said, what is that like? I mean, we're basically having the same experience. Different content, but it runs around. And when we let that run, then it's no longer simply the tennis ball, so to speak. It's filling massive space. And we start to think there's something the matter with us. There's something the matter with me. When often, what's happening is, if you're not responding that way, what in the world's the matter with you? Right? It's the messenger. And when we ignore the messenger and say something's the matter with me in that sense, it creates a problem for us. And so part of the peace is, let's not get stuck at 2 in the morning. I mean, I know for me, if I go there and have that experience, at this point, most of the time, not always, but most of the time, I can say, Ron, it's 2 in the morning. And whatever you're thinking about at 2 in the morning is probably not going to be very useful to you. So if there is something that needs attention, write it down. So occasionally I get up at night, and write a couple words down. If it's something that needs to happen or not happen. But I'm not going to solve anything then. So identifying this is what's going on, and whether one journals it, or whether one speaks it to a friend, or one prays it, but it stops. My $5 word for that is rumination. It stops that stuff from going around, and we can actually get a look at it, and that's a good start. Joe, am I on track with what you're thinking?
Yes.
Okay. Anything else you want to add to that, or okay?
No, just posing the question.
Okay. So
are you? Primarily, what you're saying is the choosing of response to the emotion. Is that what?
Part of the, I guess square one is saying, it's here, I'm feeling this thing.
Yeah.
Again, that sounds really simple, mm-hmm. But when we're overwhelmed, it's not the place we go.
So we see it, but I guess, maybe you're getting to that. I mean, we see the emotion, but what we do with it is the next
phase. That's another
phase,
deal,
and
absolutely.
And that's where we're going to probably
go. Yeah, absolutely, we're going to be heading there.
Okay.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Even admitting it to ourselves and recognizing it as emotion is even huge, I would think. I mean, because we tend to, that doesn't bother me. I'm okay. But we may see these actions that don't necessarily connect.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So that allowing ourselves to make that connection.
Absolutely.
It's huge.
And then if we do the action, okay, I used the example a bit ago about cleaning. So then we can have an argument about whether the place is clean enough or not. Okay. Well, why are you cleaning? Well, no, it's fine. Well, you left something there, and it just kind of goes on and on. And so now we have a debate about this, and it's actually got nothing to do with that. Yeah, so I got an opinion, you got an opinion. Isn't that nice? But it's not about that. It's about what's going on with me. And so what's that messenger again? So to know oneself, to know the folks that you're close to, when I can start seeing myself, you know, in the stove or in the whatever, like, oh, how was your day? Oh, I was really busy. Yeah, I know, how was your day? And begin to learn some things about ourselves and the people that we're close to. So the idea that we can't have these spots where whether we feel overwhelmed or we feel anxious or we feel whatever, to give ourselves permission to have those is a pretty significant piece. Here's a non-biblical piece. There's a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. It's actually part of a Leonard Cohen song. The chorus of it goes, ring the bells, it still can ring. Forget your perfect offering. There's a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. This isn't an attempt at a biblical statement. But if we take that into that environment, isn't that when we're often more ready to hear from God? Isn't that when we're more ready to hear from God's Spirit? When our life, the vase, our life, the jug, hasn't got any cracks in it, we don't have space for a lot of other things. But when the reality of life gets experienced, and we allow ourselves to recognize that, we're a lot more open. I think part of maturing and part of what I've worked at in my own spiritual life is to begin to make a commitment that I'm not only going to grow in the crisis times, I'm also going to grow and give attention to God outside of the crisis times. And I started figuring that out probably 10 years after adolescence. I began to give that some attention. I mean, a significant marker for me in my life was at about age 16. Yeah, it was 16. And I was in 3 motor vehicle accidents, 2 of them very potential to be killed. A driver in none of them. And all within about 3 months, 4 months. One of them was a fuel truck in those days, and that's a few years ago. But the largest fuel truck, you know, tanker that would carry some kind of fuel. I don't know what kind of fuel we were carrying. But I was riding in a truck like that, and it went over a embankment in the mountains. And, had it ignited, there was fuel all over the place. I wouldn't be here, and they might still be looking for pieces of the truck. And then a couple of other accidents, not as dramatic, but certainly an option to be fatal. And part of what I began to think about, the reason I know it was 16, because one of the accidents was with a friend of mine who had just gotten his license, and I was the same age as he was, and we weren't doing anything crazy in driving. He'd just gotten a situation where he didn't have enough skill to handle it. And I began to think at that point, and was a trigger for me, well, what's life about, actually? You know, till then it was kind of getting up in the morning and going to bed and going to school and working a little bit and hanging out with friends. And I began to think, oh my goodness, what's life about, actually? And so those kind of crises were an invitation for me, a reminder. Ron, as an adolescent, most adolescents, and I don't think I was much different in that way, I just thought I'd live forever. I'm bulletproof, I can do whatever. And I began to think, my goodness, there must be something else here. I got to think about life a little differently. And until I began noticing over some time that, you know, when things were tough, I was more responsive to God than when they weren't tough. And I don't think that's peculiar particularly, but I began to think about, you know, what if I was simply responsive to God and had God in my life in such a way that I didn't need a crisis to be responsive. But certainly, when the crises show up, that's how the light gets in. As compared to saying, this shouldn't be happening, which at one level, it shouldn't be happening. But at the same time, that's how life is. And those are some of the things that visit us.
Thank you for listening to this lecture brought to you by biblicaltraining.org. Feel free to make copies of this lecture to give to others, but please do not charge for these copies or alter the content in any way without permission. We invite you to visit our website at www.biblicaltraining.org. There you will find the finest in evangelical teaching for use in the home and the church, and it is absolutely free. Our curriculum includes classes for new believers, lay education classes, and seminary-level classes taught by some of the finest seminary teachers drawn from a wide range of evangelical traditions.